the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Legislators are often up to no good, it seems that way, and certainly in California. One legislator has, well, she started an initiative that has led to a massive backlash. In this case, she is proposing legislation that would completely outlaw, indeed criminalize, spanking or using corporal punishment on any child under the age of 3. It's a categorical law she proposes, and, well, the response has been pretty categorical as well. But all across the nation right now, this initiative in California has started a new conversation about corporal punishment. It's, by the way, not just in the U.S. In Japan, the government is now looking at bringing corporal punishment back into the schools. In other places, it is an issue of contention in terms of defining it, criminalizing it, regulating it. This is our discussion today, and my guess is there are a lot of parents that are going to want to get in on this, because the big issue here is parental authority, the ability to discipline children, and the reality that corporal punishment has a place in that disciplinary toolbox held by parents who really want to teach their children to control their children, to discipline their children, and to teach them a clear difference between right and wrong, and to make very clear that actions have consequences. We'll be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Today at my website at albertmohler.com, I posted an article on the scary logic of Peter Singer. Those who are familiar with the name Peter Singer will already have your defense mechanisms up. He is a professor of bioethics at the Center for Human Values at Princeton University. Now, you would think that anyone who would hold a chair in bioethics at Princeton University would speak on behalf of human life and human dignity, but in this case, you would be wrong. Peter Singer is already notorious, one of the most controversial academics in the world. He, by the way, began teaching in Australia and only later came to the U.S. in Princeton. He has an op-ed piece in today's edition of the New York Times. Now, in this particular article, he is addressing the case of a severely disabled girl known only as Ashley. Perhaps you've heard about her. She is the so-called pillow baby. That's what her parents call her. And these parents had asked medical ethicists, the medical review board, to authorize surgery that would remove her reproductive organs and hormone treatments that would keep her small. Here's the deal with her parents. Her parents say at this point, this girl that has the intellectual ability of a three-month-old and whose brain will not develop is a sweet, placid girl they receive and cherish as their daughter. She's unable to walk. She's unable to move. She is unable to communicate. They're not even sure that she recognizes them as her parents. But nonetheless, they can care for her. They clean her. They feed her. They take care of her. And they're able to do this because at this point, she's of relatively small size. These parents getting older themselves recognized as she gets older and would undergo puberty and other changes, it would be much more difficult for them to care for her. The medical ethics board approved the surgery and also the hormone treatments. This is very controversial. And actually, my point in raising this is not to debate the case of Ashley at all, nor really was it Peter Singer's. He was using her case as a way of saying that the whole debate over Ashley was wrongly focused. Why? He said it's wrongly focused because she is being treated as if just because she is a human being, a member of the human species, she should be recognized as possessing human dignity. And Peter Singer fundamentally does not believe that. This is the stuff of which nightmares are made, folks. This is truly frightening stuff. This is a professor at Princeton University. Here's what he writes in today's New York Times. I'm quoting from one paragraph. He says, here's where things get philosophically interesting. We are always ready to find dignity in human beings, including those whose mental age will never exceed that of an infant, but we don't attribute dignity to dogs or cats, although they clearly operate at a more advanced mental level than human infants. Just making that comparison provokes outrage in some quarters, but why should dignity always go together with species membership, no matter what the characteristics of the individual may be? I hope you were listening carefully to that, folks. Because there you had a man who holds a chair of bioethics in Princeton University who says a dog or a cat whose mind operates is more deserving of dignity and the preservation of life, the right to life, than a human being that does not function at that conscious level. Peter Singer first came to notoriety on the animal rights front, but that quickly got expanded to other ethical issues as well. He suggests, for instance, that infants, human infants, who do not have a sense of themselves, do not have the ability to conceive of the future, and cannot communicate, should not be considered as having an absolute right to life. He says infanticide can be a moral act in many cases, and he goes on to say that doesn't just relate to infants who could never develop those capacities, but to infants who even now do not possess those capacities. He says that some animals, barnyard animals, cows, pigs, and pets like cats and dogs may indeed be more deserving of a right to life than some human beings. Now, folks, just think of where that logic leads. Well, let's just think of where that logic led. Anyone remember the Third Reich? Anytime you start talking about life unworthy of life, you are dividing humans between those who deserve to live and those who do not. And when you reach the point that you say some animals have a greater right to life than any human being, then you are in a direct collision with the biblical Christian worldview. I can't think of a clearer example. I can't think of a more dramatic illustration of where the Christian worldview is in absolute antagonism and opposition to this postmodern worldview of the day. You know, the Christian understanding of human dignity is not rooted in the fact that we are such good and noble creatures. It's based upon the fact that the Bible states clearly that every single human being is made in the image of God. And those who bear the image of God, those who are created in the image of God, are of a completely different category than all animal species who are not made in the image of God. Little Ashley, we don't know her last name, we don't know where she lives. We don't know whether her brain will develop any or at all beyond where she is now, but we do know this. She is made in the image of God. She is a human being, and human dignity is absolutely dependent upon our determination to speak up for the dignity of every single human being, starting with Ashley and going on to those who have Down syndrome and going on to those who have physical infirmity and going on to those who we might consider to be suboptimal in terms of any category, whether it be athletic ability or intellectual ability or looks or anything else. Every single human being is made in the image of God, and that's what defines being a human being. And every single human being possesses human dignity, and we need to recognize that. This is the stuff of which nightmares are made. Sex education is in such a mess. I also posted an article on this yesterday, and I want to bring your attention to it because what we're looking at here is an absolute breakdown. You talk about a collision of worldviews. Anytime you start talking about sex education in the schools, this is where you end up, in a conflict between those who believe that there is a pattern for normative sexual behavior and those who believe that there is not. The cultural elite just can't understand how there could be persons like Christians, for instance, who believe that there is a norm, that morality cannot be separated from sexuality. Maureen McLean, a lecturer in history and literature at Harvard University, has published a major article in the Boston Review in which she's looking at several of the most contemporary books on sex education and the controversies around it. And she rightly points back to the fact that sex education really emerged in the public schools as a part of the social hygiene movement. In other words, originally it was pretty much about how the body works and how one should prepare for these bodily changes and all the rest. But during the 1960s and well on into the 70s and the 80s, it became far more ideological. Because as the sexual revolution took place in the culture, all of a sudden there were many people who said, look, we need to teach kids, well, what's now labeled as comprehensive sex education. When you see that, you need to know what that label means. It means not only talking about the reproductive realities of sex, the physical changes of puberty. It means actual instruction on how to have sex. It means talk about everything from abortion and contraceptive and birth control to what's labeled, of course, safe sex and now sexual orientation issues. And because all of those issues are laden with morality, you have a conflict here. Now, Professor McLean is suggesting that the liberals have been arguing wrongly on this. She said, look, this is why the conservatives are winning. The conservatives are winning in so many cases because the liberals say it's about public health and it's about the consequences of not practicing safe sex. She says, and I'll quote here, she says, most citizens will not absolutely detach sexual behavior from morality, and many continue to invoke religion as opposed to or alongside public health as the or a proper framework for transmitting sexual knowledges. In other words, she says the liberals need to have a moral argument, and the moral argument needs to be, well, this is where she ends up, needs to be that the liberals should argue for a more liberal form of sex education because they need to argue justice and happiness. But it tells you everything that she has to tell her fellow liberals on the left, that in order to understand the controversy, you have to understand that there are many citizens, in fact, she concedes most, who will not detach absolutely detach sexual morality, sexual behavior from morality. Well, just think about that. Who does? Isn't it amazing that this reflects the fact that obviously she's writing to people whom she is confident do absolutely detach sexual behavior from morality? And then she goes on to explain, and oh, by the way, there's some people who think because of religious commitments that there is a norm to sexual behavior. Folks, when she has to tell the people reading the Boston Review of this reality, we are really in big trouble. You'll find my articles at Albert Mohler, that's MOHLER.com, and you'll find Intelligent Christian Conversation right here when we come back. The issue is spanking, and the next call could be yours. The phone, 877-893-8255. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, perhaps you've heard in the media what's going on in California. A lot of controversy over a piece of legislation that hasn't even been introduced yet. Nevertheless, when Assemblywoman Sally Lever, who's also the Speaker pro tem of the General Assembly there in California, went public with her proposal to ban all corporal punishment of children 3 years and younger, well, it really, really incited a near riot in California and conversation all over the U.S. That doesn't mean, by the way, the bill won't pass, because popular support is not always tied to what actually happens in a legislature, and in particular the California General Assembly. All kinds of nutty stuff comes in and out of these legislatures, but few bills have incited more interest, especially before they are actually introduced, than that of Assemblywoman Lever. Now, we're going to talk today about this, and I'll tell you, the focal point of our discussion here is whether the state or parents should have the right to understand what is best for their children, not only those three and under, but those much older, in terms of discipline. Now, let's be real clear right up front. We're not talking about abuse. We're not talking about permanent harm to children. We're talking about disciplinary corporal punishment, which most human beings have known from the beginning of time. Clearly dealt with in Scripture. Indeed, not only authorized in Scripture, but Scripture comes with an argument for why it's so important. In terms of teaching obedience, requiring authority and submission to parental authority, and also teaching the link between actions and consequences, the inevitable actions that would follow wrongdoing and disobedience or disrespect. But in order to understand why this bill is so radical, I want you to know something about Assemblywoman Lever. Number one, she is married. And she and her husband, David, represent the 22nd District, which is considered, as she says in her website, the heart of Silicon Valley. Now, listen, this is right off of her website. She's talking about herself here. And this is how she describes herself and her family. Sally represents the 22nd District, considered the heart of Silicon Valley, where she lives with her husband, David. Now, listen to this. They are proud to be active in neighborhood and community activities, enjoy hiking and windsurfing, and take seriously their role as pet guardians for a politically astute black and white cat. So there you've got it. They're pet guardians, notice not owners, not even companions, but pet guardians of a black and white cat. No children. So this is a woman who has no children and has never had children, but does have a black and white cat. And she's ready to tell the mothers and fathers, the parents of California, how they may or may not raise their children. Now, you need to hear in her own words, with her own voice, what she has to say. We're going to listen to several clips here from National Public Radio on Monday, the day-to-day program, when Madeline Brand was interviewing Sally Lever. Listen to what she has to say.
Well, what we're saying with this bill is that any corporal punishment of a child 3 years old or under would be illegal. So that would include any punishment that is intended to cause physical pain.
Can you be more specific?
Well, it would include swatting, smacking, slapping, spanking.
Yeah, well, that kind of covers what a lot of parents know right off. We're going to roll through these. I want you to hear her voice. I want you to hear her just try to make the case for what she's up to here.
We all wish that there was a line in the law that separates discipline of a child from child abuse. But this is a very gray area in the law, in fact, and those caring for children are only prohibited from using punishments that are unjustifiable. So the pediatricians, the family law judges, the prosecutors are all seeing children that are beaten black and blue and yet criminal defendants walk.
Okay, hold on, hold on. There are two huge problems with that statement. Number one, an awful lot of the analysis done in California in response to this says it just isn't true. It's not true that you have pediatricians, family law judges, and prosecutors seeing children that are beaten black and blue, and yet their parents go without sanction. I mean that's just not realistic. But then furthermore, since child abuse is illegal, and she refers to those who are supposedly walking as criminal defendants, here's a big question for her. If the law against child abuse isn't keeping people from abusing their children, then why would a law against spanking be any more effective? I mean, the illogic of her position here is, you know, the law is going to solve the problem, and yet even when she's making her case, she admits the criminal law already hasn't solved the problem of genuine abuse. But, you know, she's hanging herself with her own words. Let's let her roll on.
If it's simply restraint of a child, pulling them out of a dangerous situation, no, absolutely not.
But the SWAT
not.
Part, the little SWAT on the butt, would that be
hitting,
illegal?
Hitting a child 3 years old or younger would be.
Now, you have to understand the context of that clip. This is my favorite one. Because the question is, would protective contact be banned? Now, after all, we're talking here specifically in the case of this proposed legislation about children 3 and under. And several people have asked Assemblywoman Lieber, this basic question. Let's say you've got a toddler who's headed towards a hot iron. Couldn't you slap her hand? Couldn't you say, no, that's hot, don't touch it, and slap her hand? And she says no. She said you could hold her back. But you couldn't use any kind of punishment that would involve pain in any way. You couldn't even smack her little hand. You couldn't give a swat to her little behind because that would be illegal. Now, you realize what this means is that the parent, if she doesn't want to get charged with anything, should let the child touch the iron. I mean, the insanity of this is that, she's claiming to do this on behalf of the welfare of children. And yet anyone who, by the way, has actually had one, you would think, indeed, anyone who's actually been one would understand that sometimes you've got to use some energetic and loving protective moves with a child, hopefully ones they will remember long enough that they will not hurt themselves again. All right, we got to listen to this lady. We want to give her her voice. By the way, we would love to have had her on. We called her office, invited her on. That wasn't possible. So you're just going to have to listen to her from NPR.
We all want to believe that all parents are giving a light swat or a tap and using physical discipline very sparingly. They're doing it once in a blue moon. But unfortunately, there are parents and caregivers who are slapping and hitting and spanking many, many times a day and for almost anything.
But I understand that. But how would you differentiate? How would you delineate between the two?
There isn't really a way to delineate, and that's why any hitting of a child, any physical punishment that's intended to cause pain would be banned under our bill.
There you go. You know, the law's going to solve the problem. And yet she admits you can't define the difference between lawful corporal punishment and child abuse. She says here, and by the way, I disagree with that categorically, but that's her argument. So we'll just define it all as illegal. Well, the problem is, And anyone who serves seriously as a legislator has to know this, you can't criminalize something without defining it. And so I don't know exactly how she intends. Well, she says anything that may cause pain. Well, that restraint could cause pain. I think anyone who's been a kid, remember sometimes dad grabs your arm, and it's one of those kind of protective grabs, but it's also, well, let's just call it a teaching grab. You know, you remember what that grab felt like. All right, Ms. Lieber continues.
What we're trying to stop are the perpetual users of physical discipline. And if the responsible parents have to give up a privilege to use physical punishment on infants and toddlers to stop those who are using it perpetually, then we think that's worthwhile.
I don't know who the we there is exactly, by the way. But maybe it's Assemblywoman Lieber and her husband and their guarded cat. But regardless here, the issue is that this legislator in California thinks that it is the state's responsibility to tell parents that they can use no corporal punishment whatsoever in the discipline of their children under age 3, and furthermore, that the state will criminalize that behavior. Criminalize, which means a little swat to the rear end means that that little toddler might not have a mommy or daddy at home because they could be, after all, in jail. The phone number, 877-893-8255. I want to know what you think. 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, after all, who knows best, the state, that is the government, or you, about how to raise your children? And on the issue of corporal punishment, what right does the state have to say that you can't, categorically can't, against threat of criminal penalties, can't use any kind of corporal punishment with your children? In this case, 3 years are younger. But the real goal here, as a lot of the media reports quite clearly admit, is the complete elimination of corporal punishment. She indicates that. I say she. This is Assemblywoman Sally Lieber of Mountain View in California, says that there are 10 European countries that have completely banned the corporal punishment, and the U.S. needs to move in that direction. She cites Thomas Nazario of the San Francisco Law School as giving her the idea. He says, quote, "Why do we allow parents to hit a little child and not someone their own size? Everyone in the state is protected from physical violence, so where do you draw the line? To take a child and spank his little butt until he starts crying, some people would define that as physical violence," end quote. Well, some people might define that as being, you know, Martian square dancing. That doesn't make it physical violence. And, you know, most Americans would define that as parenting and disciplining children. But again, when we're talking about Assemblywoman Sally Lieber, we're talking about someone who doesn't have any children, hasn't raised any children. I mentioned to you that on her own website, she said that she and her husband, David, were the pet guardians of a black and white cat. In a report that was published, in this case, in the Sacramento paper, the report says this. For the record, she does not have children and says she was not slapped as a child, but she does have a cat named Snoop, which her veterinarian told her never to hit. Quote, "And if you never hit a cat," Lieber said, "you should never hit a kid." Well, you need to hit the phones. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to get to those calls, and there are many on the line. But I want you to hear one last word, because this is going to send you over the top. Buckle your seatbelts, you know, take a baby aspirin, and get ready to hear the final piece de la resistance of what she has to say here about spanking. Just, if you're not going to spank, then what do you do? Listen.
This issue is at the same place that domestic violence was 20 or 30 years ago, when that was considered to be something that was private within a marriage between a husband and a wife, and not something that government should play a role in or that people should be aware of. And so I think that everything indicates that this is a very reasonable way to have a less violent society, to try to have more use of conflict resolution, and hopefully to have a more peaceful future.
Okay, we should have some kind of string quartet playing in the background here. But just, you got to love this. If you don't spank your children, and here we have a woman who's never had one telling us that we're to raise our children. Instead, she says, she hopes that this becomes a very reasonable way to a less violent society, because, you know, after all, it's spanking that's leading to murder in the streets. And so instead, we should try to have more use of conflict resolution. Now, where was this lady when I was a kid? That's what I want to know. The conflict resolution part. I guess mom and dad and misbehaving kid are to sit around in a circle and say, when you misbehave, this is how I feel. And, you know, I don't like it when you do this. When you disobey me, it hurts my feelings. You know, that's not the way it was when I grew up. It wasn't the feelings that got hurt. It was something else. And I'm very thankful for that. I mean, conflict resolution. What are you supposed to do? Call in Henry Kissinger every time the kid needs correction? You know, let's have a meeting of the minds here. You don't need to meet the minds. It's something else that needs to get met. This is a complete misunderstanding. This is treating children as if they are autonomous individuals, as if they are completely mature moral agents. You know, you don't have fist fights between companies that are suing each other over trademark issues. That just doesn't happen. You have a rational conflict resolution process, or you settle it in the courts. Well, in the millions of homes where children are being raised across America, it's not the same thing. And it's insanity to treat it as the same thing. This is the kind of the ultimate just devolution of a therapeutic society. Let's have conflict resolution. Let's have your calls. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. From Grand Rapids, Michigan, Josh is on the line. Go ahead, Josh.
Yes. Just as I just felt like I could see the hidden agenda behind this so clearly, from the standpoint of, I think she deeply realizes, the effectiveness of corporal punishment in children, is I really think that the agenda here is desiring to raise children in our society that would be selfish, self-indulgent, and would end up supporting the left-wing agenda eventually with with the choices that they would end up making. So
yeah,
she understands very clearly the effectiveness of that.
Yeah, Josh, I really appreciate that point. By the way, it reminds me of Michael Barone, the very insightful political and social observer who years ago wrote a book on Hard America and Soft America. Really makes your point that here you have kind of soft America at work. Everything is a conflict that can be resolved by talk and all the rest. And I think you're exactly right. It produces children who don't know right from wrong. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Remember, the number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I think it's going to be hours before these phone lines cool down. So many parents are wanting to join this conversation, and that's great. We're going to get to your calls again in just a minute. But just in case you did not hear what Assemblywoman Sally Lieber said about what should be done by parents in lieu of spanking, I just want you to hear this last part again. Just hear this, treasure it, memorize it, and the next time your young child misbehaves, remember the alternative.
And so I think that everything indicates that this is a very reasonable way to have a less violent society, to try to have more use of conflict resolution, and hopefully to have a more peaceful future.
Yeah, more peaceful future is what we all want, through conflict resolution rather than corporal punishment. Bring in the official conflict resolution therapists and specialists and consultants the next time Junior misbehaves. I don't think so. The phone number 877-893-8255. Laura is calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFAA. Go ahead, Laura.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I have a 16-month-old little boy, and I'm appalled to even hear that someone who doesn't have a child herself without experiencing a 16-month-old could believe that she has this knowledge, that she would even know how.
Now, this 16-month-old is not always going to be 16-month-old. Let me just ask you, Laura. You can see a time when he just might be 3 or 4, and he just might need a spanking. Is that right?
Absolutely. And that's my point, is that I just cannot see. He's a very strong-willed child, and I can't even get the words out.
Well, Laura, that's all right. I think you've made your point very eloquently. And you've got all the credibility needed here when you call up as an actual mom of a 16-month-old boy, and that kind of says it all. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Debbie. Listen on WFAA. Go ahead, Debbie.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you, although I'm outraged, and my guess is you may be too.
I am so upset. I turned on the radio at 5 o'clock, and I'm so glad I did. I'm a mother of three and a mother of twins that are up in age, and also a mother of a Down syndrome child that's almost 20 years old. And when I heard Mrs. Liebert's statements, I almost just went, I was just baffled. I'm just so upset at this, and I can't understand how a woman who has never had any children could even make this type of statement. And I just have another comment. I would love to know how she actually disciplines her cats.
Well,
I'm so upset at this. I was raised with discipline when I was a child, and I thank my mother and dad every day for the type of person that I have turned out to be. And I've also raised my children that way, and I am so proud of them.
Let me test something here with you, Debbie. She says that she acknowledges there's a difference between loving parental discipline and child abuse. She says, but there's no real way to tell them apart. Do you agree with that?
I totally disagree. I mean, I'm like the caller before me. I just cannot believe that this lady could say this, not having any children. And my question is, what are we to do with these children once they turn 3 years old in one day? Working for a school system and, discipline issues are bad enough. I mean, if they don't know discipline, and, by the time they're 3 years old, What's going to happen to these children?
Yeah, Debbie, I'll tell you very honestly, it's clear that her agenda isn't to stop at three, that she sees this as a piece of legislation she thinks she's going to be able to get through. Because in many of her public comments, not only in NPR, but also on Sean Hannity's radio program and many others, she's really come out and said more or less that this is something that she thinks should be so obvious to people that you can start with three and under and then move up the line. I guess that she's probably shocked by the amount of opposition she's getting to this. And in the California General Assembly, it'll be interesting to see what kind of traction this has. But I think we have to take it very seriously because, after all, California is our largest and most populous state, and legal precedents and legislative precedents set there tend to move across the country. And not only that, you've got Hollywood and the media and all these engines of communicating to the larger culture, and I think we need to know exactly what's going on there. Debbie, thank you so much for your call, and God bless you. What a great thing to hear from a mom of your experience, and God bless you and your children. And, you know, I have to come back and say the same thing. I think there is a clear line between the judicious and proper use of corporal punishment and abuse. And I think that line comes down to any kind of lasting injury. You know, when you're talking about swats to the rear end, and you're talking about something that could turn the skin pink, but you are not talking about something that causes bruising, and certainly no injury to the child. But you are going to get his attention. By the way, in the book of Proverbs, it says that using the rod on the child, the rod being the symbol of parental authority here and corporal punishment, says, he will cry, but he will not die. And what does it mean by that? It means that there's something worse than physical pain. That's the whole logic of corporal punishment in the scripture. There's something worse than physical pain, and that is not being disciplined. In the book of Hebrews, we're told that a loving father chastises his son. A parent chastises, punishes his child or her child because we love them enough not to let them go without that. And he says, you know, that's what the father's love looks like. And it is not loving to leave a child undisciplined. Let's go to Julie. Well, we just lost Julie there. Folks, the phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This issue is just getting attention all over the country. And it's getting attention because parents understand this is a direct assault upon parental authority. Someone's going to make the call about the discipline of our children, and it is either going to be the parent, or in this case, it would be the state. And that just isn't going to work. That just isn't going to work. It isn't even going to work if this General Assembly thinks it's a great idea and passes this bill unanimously, because the state is still in no competent position to make the decision about what is best for your child or my child under the circumstance of the need for discipline, the act of disobedience, disrespect, or whatever. And, you know, I think it's, again, very, very interesting that this assemblywoman comes down to say that the existing laws on child abuse aren't keeping people from abusing their children. Now, that ought to alarm us all. So now she wants to outlaw spanking as if that's now going to solve the problem. You know, the law can do many things. And the law is indeed, government is indeed God's gift. The law can teach, the law can protect, the law can instruct, the law can execute justice. But the law can't take over the function of parents. The state can't take over the essential function of parents. We'll be right back with some final thoughts, coast to coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program. We're going to take as many calls as we can. Let's go to Genoa, Nebraska, where Susan's on the line listening on KCRO. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I just had a comment regarding the discipline of the children, because I have a business where I do criminal background checks for pre-employment purposes, and I've noticed that since I've been doing it, the kids from, like, the 80s on just have horrible criminal records. And I know, and we all know this, to lack of discipline. Even the courts don't discipline them like they used to. And they, it's just terrible. I can't even express how bad it's gotten in the last 10 years.
Well, Susan, I think you can have a cause and effect relationship there, which is exactly what you're implying. Kids that aren't taught to obey are in big trouble. And here's a biblical principle you need to keep in mind. God makes very clear that obedience is an absolute necessity. First of all, he makes that clear to Israel. You better obey me. If you disobey me, there will be severe consequences. Blessing and curse. In Deuteronomy 30, he says, see, I've set before you blessing and curse, life and death. Choose life and live. And that's everything to do with obedience. And then when you get to the instructions to parents in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, it comes right down to you must require your children to obey. And here's the deal, a very clear biblical principle. If your children will not respect and obey parents, they will not respect and obey God. And by the way, they will not respect and obey the government. And that's Susan's point. That's how you get into the criminal background checks. They get in the habit of disobeying. If they disobey you, they'll disobey the law. They'll disobey God. However, on the other hand, if you teach a child respect and obedience and submission to authority, then they will find their way into submission to authority and respect and obedience in other spheres of life. Thanks so much for your call, Susan. Let's go to Julie listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Julie.
Hello, Dr. Moeller. I have an idea that I think might change Mrs. Lieberman's mind. Let one of these proposed three-year-olds who's never been disciplined get a hold of the little black and white cat and pull it like a wishbone. And I'm sure that Mrs. Lieber would change her mind about, you know, slapping his hands.
Julie, I love that as the final call, and I wish we could take more, but we are out of time, folks. That just about says it all. It has to do with that short word that a lot of people don't like, which is reality. And the reality of having a three-year-old with the cat just might change her mind about who it is that needs to be disciplined. I wish we could get to more calls. Thank you so much for your interest, and we'll continue this discussion. I want to direct you to my website at albertmoeller.com and to the Washington Post Newsweek series on faith. This week, the question, should presidential candidates tell us about their religious beliefs? I argue yes, because we're not compartmentalized selves, and I want to know how they connect to their deepest commitments to their public policy and personal decisions. You can read it at On Faith. Go to albertmoeller.com. Your link will take you there. We'll meet you next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Moeller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.